Sir, we've had a little problem. These two women are just arriving. They objected to giving up their weapons.
Klingons do not surrender their weapons.
Who are you?
We are Lursa and Bator of the House of Duras.
Hello and welcome to the Klingon edition of the Duras Sisters podcast. I am not Ashlyn. I am Lursa.
And I am not Rihanna. I am Bator.
And today is the most honorable day of all, because we are here to talk about uniting the Klingon houses in Star Trek Discovery.
It will be glorious and honorable, and I wish kapla to us all.
Woo!
I think we win the golden targ for that one, Ashlyn. I could see you almost slipped into Ashlyn before you were Lursa, so that was
close
one.
So we have two different identities, much like Ash Tyler. As the Duras sisters, they like to come in, do our intro for us, and then Ashlyn and Rihanna are here, and we're going to analyze the shit out of these Klingons today.
Yes, thank you all so much for joining us. Of course, as you can tell, we are talking about Discovery today. Ashlyn has an amazing Klingon shirt on. What does it say?
It says it's a Klingon thing.
Mm.
You wouldn't understand.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Ashlyn, for joining me and just for getting to do this podcast festival with Strange New Pod has been like truly a dream come true. So we are just so happy to be here with you all talking about the Klingons and Discovery today.
Yeah. And this is a busy day for the podcast festival. Rihanna, tell us about the shows that have already happened in the festival
far. So we've already had Star Trek Discovery Pod, Salon Trek, BQN Podcast, The View Screen was this morning. And then that's us. So Ashlyn, who's coming up in the festival still?
Yeah, 6 o'clock, we have Promenade Merchants Podcast. And then at 9:30 is Captain's Quadrant to close out Easter Sunday. But for the rest of the week, you have Trexpert's Quiz to look forward to. Rihanna and I are both on that one as well. It's going to be me and Julian and Davey all versus each other playing.
And I'm
security.
A scorekeeper, so whew.
Yes, and the quiz was written by MC from Strange New Pod. So don't want to miss that. It's going to be on Monday. Then for the remaining days, we have Yum Yum Pod, Brides of Chaotica, I Quit Star Trek, and yet another Star Trek podcast. So nothing but fun ahead for the rest of the festival.
Yeah, it's been so incredible already. We were able to go live with Strange New Pod on Thursday and cover all of season 4 of Discovery. So now we kind of get to do a little special Duras Sisters deep dive like we normally do. And you know, since we haven't done a Klingon series, I thought this is like a good little toe in, you know, to what the Klingon series might end up looking like once we do one on the pod. So this is such a great way to honor Discovery is by honoring the Klingons.
Yeah. And I always want to do right by the Klingons. I think that's why we haven't done a series on them yet, because I need to like sink my teeth in. And this is, like Rihanna said, this is a great way to do it. So yeah, thank you all for joining us today, for especially going live is always super fun. I want to remind you that you can watch all of the podcast festival here on YouTube, and then they will be available the next day on Strange New Pod and our podcast feed. So anywhere you get your podcasts, you'll be able to get this festival a day late. So try to watch them live so you don't have to wait.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Ashlyn, well, I see you already have a very voluptuous looking Lursa on your mic today. I have Bator with me today for those who can see us visually. But we need another friend.
Rihanna, Bator has the batleth up, so you can't see her titties as much.
Okay, I'll give him a view.
Either way, I'm delighted.
Yeah. So here they are. Let's bring another friend. And Ashlyn, can you tell everyone what you did today? And I sort of copied you.
Yeah. So on our podcast, like normal people, we normally pull action figures out of a bag to have someone to be a friend to join us for the podcast. But today I have rigged my action figure selection to only be Klingons. So we have a guaranteed Klingon coming on an adventure. Rihanna, are you ready to pull?
Yes.
I'm going to randomly choose. You can hear them. There we go. Shaking around.
I always have to shake them. Okay. No surprises here.
All right. Rihanna, who do you have?
I have Worf. Instead of Mo.
Yeah, okay, wonderful. Great.
Yes, who do you have?
I got his grandpa.
With another ballot. Yeah. So now it's just really a Klingon
this extravaganza. This is a proper Klingon showing.
So, yes, thank you, everyone. Okay, thank you, Worf, and thank you, Grampy Worf, for joining us on this podcast today.
About Klingons. I can normally fit him on the mic. I don't know if that's going to be possible. So we're just going to have to...
He's a little too much, too powerful.
Yeah, there's too much. That might work. Anyway. Yeah. Okay, so we have to thank a couple of people before we get started. Number one being Julian Brown from Strange New Pod for producing this episode and going live with us today. Julian is the absolute GOAT. And just Strange New Pod has been such a great group to collaborate with for the festival. So huge thank you to everyone over there.
And truly thank you to everyone who is in the festival. I love seeing just the excitement over Discovery, the wonderful dedications everyone has been doing to Discovery on all of their different shows. It's just been so fun to watch, and I can't wait to see more of them as we continue on through this festival and then start season 5 of Disco. So,
roller coaster. Okay, well, let's get down to business, Rihanna. So we have many Dura sister traditions that we're checking off right now. And another tradition is we ask each other kind of unhinged questions to kind of warm us up into the topic. So, you know, Rihanna, we're talking about Klingons and Discovery, and the whole plot starts talking about this torchbearer. So I have a question for you.
Yeah.
You can choose any Klingons in all of Star Trek. Who would you choose to be the torchbearer to unite the 24 houses in this time period of that Discovery takes place in? So you can choose a Klingon from any iteration of Star Trek. Who's your torchbearer? And number two, who is the hype man slash woman slash Klingon who is going to hype your torchbearer up and be their loyal ho till the end?
Okay, love this question. Very excited about this. So I kind of accidentally went Deep Space Nine here, which is no surprise to anyone who knows me. I am decided that Martok will be my torchbearer. He has already proved himself to be an excellent leader, excellent in combat. I know that he had his issues later on in life. Obviously, trauma will do that to you, but I think he's still an amazing leader, chancellor, person, in general, all around. Awesome Klingon. And then I think the absolute GOAT hype man will be Worf. I mean, come on. You have to. Like, it's either that or they're flipped around for me. So those are my answers. It feels very Deep Space Nine. I think it was already kind of manifested almost. Like, we almost had a torchbearer, like, hype man GOAT situation already going on. So that is my choice. Ashlyn, I'm so curious. Who will be your torchbearer and who will hype them up the whole time?
See, Martok is a great answer. I love your answer. But I think this is like you're trying to unite the houses in this time period where they've all been at war for so long. Like, you need someone strong. And so I'm going to go actually with Worf because he's a lot like Voke, that he grew up isolated and lonely, away from his people, away from his house. And I think if he can reach into anybody's hearts and convince them to join as one, it would be Worf. They might not like him that he's like a Starfleet lieutenant, commander, captain, whatever iteration, but that's fine. We'll get through it. And then I'm actually having Kang, his brother, as his hype man.
Oh, Kern. God, I'm so sorry. There's so many Klingons, and they start with K's a lot of the time.
Disrespect to Kern. I'm so sorry.
No, you're fine.
Kern is his hype man because absolute dream team. I love when they're working together.
Bro, I love this answer because not only is it already a family house, so they can like unite the other families. It's like
House of Moog.
You have like the older and younger sibling that they already kind of use as a dynamic and other like boom. Brilliant. Love that answer.
Yeah. And Kang can get it done behind the scenes, which you need too.
And we have actually Salon Trek in the chat saying mine would be the old lady in TNG that turned down Chancellor Kimmick. So,
oh, yes. Yeah. She was cool. I forgot about her. Great answer. Great show. Yes.
Hell yeah. So thank you, everyone. And thank you, Ashlyn. That was a great question. Always fun to start with a classic Dura Sisters question. So now, Ashlyn, we, as normal, watched some episodes to prepare and have a little bit of a watch list here. So would you like to read it out to our listeners?
Yeah. Okay. So what are all the episodes that have Klingons? in Discovery? They are.
The Vulcan hello, Battle of the Binary Stars, The Butcher's Knife Cares Not for the Lamb's Cry, Choose Your Pain, Lethe, CV's Pacem Para Bellum, Into the Forest I Go, Despite Yourself, The War Within, The War Without, and Will You Take My Hand?
And a couple of scenes from season two as well. So that's what we're talking about, mostly just about uniting these Klingon houses and filling in this gap that we have when we're, you know, when we're watching TOS, we see that the Klingons are definitely the villain, definitely the adversary in a lot of the episodes. And now we're getting more history as to why and the details getting into it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Ashlyn. So I think let's jump right into this. And what is so interesting about Discovery in general is that it does not start with Starfleet. Like, we are starting the entire show with Klingons having the opening line. So they literally get to dominate the screen since like the first moment. So I went ahead and found these lines on a little auto script. So I'm going to read them to you because it's just very important about what the Klingons sort of after when we come to Discovery. So we hear the opening lines, they are coming, atom by atom. They will coil around us and take all that we are. There is one way to confront this threat, by reuniting the 24 warring houses of our own empire. We have forgotten the unforgettable, the last to unite our tribes, Kalesh. Together, under one creed, remain Klingon, remain Klingon. That is why we light our beacon this day, to assemble our people, to lock arms against those whose fatal greeting is, we come in peace.
Ooh.
Ooh. And then we hear Michael say, we come in peace. That's the Federation greeting or whatever. So crazy juxtaposition to start out this episode, and an incredible way to start the series, in my opinion. It's very
strong. The whole
strong.
Series. These are the first lines of the first episode.
Crazy. How do you feel, Ashlyn? How did you feel also watching this for the first time?
Okay, well, we...
Two different things.
This is the elephant in the room. I think we have to talk about how disarming the Klingons are to so many people and the huge controversy about it. I think let's just get this conversation out of the way, because when I first watched Discovery, I too was like, what is happening? And I think the problem that I was feeling is that there are a lot of Klingon customs that we see throughout Star Trek, and there are not very many that are repeated in Discovery. Like, I think in the first episode, we do see them like howling once the first Rejak, the first torchbearer is killed. Mm-hmm. We see them howling, and that is very Klingon identifying to me. So I was like, ooh, okay, yes. this is Klingon. But they look so much different. Their accents are all so Kalesh. Much. Yeah. Like the mouths are covered, and it make like changes the sound of their voices. It just didn't feel like this was the Klingon species, is how I was feeling in the beginning. And I respect making a really bold choice and sticking with it. And that is what they do, because the designs of the Bird of Prey, what we see inside the artifact, just the set design in general for everything with the Klingons is very consistent and high quality craftsmanship. Like, they spent so much money in all this Klingon stuff. So that's, I'm happy for them. You know, I support their choice, but to me, it has taken me several rewatches to get used to the Klingons. And I think also part of it is that most of these scenes are talking scenes, and there's not actually a lot of fighting, which I kind of want in this like early time with the Klingons. So those are just some of my thoughts, but I'm used to it now. And also I just love the Klingons in any iteration. They look different in every there's like three series, three different phases of the Klingon. So Rihanna, what are your thoughts? What do you think about this whole thing?
I honestly wasn't as frustrated as other people were. I think I definitely felt like a little bit irritated, like, oh yeah, they could have just like used similar types of prosthetics that they used like for our Klingons back in the day. But I also was kind of still thinking about Star Trek Into Darkness, you know, the Kelvinverse, and how much they had sort of ruined the Klingons for a lot of people, and how for me it was just like, yeah, I'm annoyed, but whatever. Those Klingons had like cool little, almost like nose piercings, but on their little, they're like piercings all over their ridges. And I was like, you know what? Grungy Klingons, cool. Like, as much as I understand a lot of people's frustration that it's not the old prosthetics, it's not the old Klingons, it's also really new tech, new types of TV, new type of prosthetics in general. Obviously, I know nothing about that types of field, but I still think it's just really important to remember. Like, for me, it wasn't as big of a polarizing thing because we had already kind of gotten that in the Kelvinverse. And I know the Kelvinverse is like this whole other universe, so it does feel different because this is our prime universe. But still, this is a part of the Klingons that we never saw. The only time we saw Klingons in this, in anywhere near this era, is Trouble with Tribbles, or like those, you know, TOS episodes that feature some Klingons. And those, of course, aren't indicative of the Klingons that we know and love of TOS and TNG and Deep Space Nine and such. So I really understand and I totally get it. But I don't think personally, especially now, but definitely even back in the day when we were first watching Discovery together, Ashlyn, I do not recall at all being like, no, okay, not at all. I was definitely like, ah, that's weird. Okay, huh, like they kind of went the same as Kelvinverse did. All right, like they're trying to be new and edgy. And I think mostly what I was annoyed at is that I was kind of bored. Like, to be honest, I've never, which is hilarious to say because we're the Duras sisters, but I've never, like, the Klingon plots, at least when I was younger, when I was in middle school and high school, I always thought they were the most boring episodes. Like, not until now that I'm older and I go back and watch Birthright Part 1 and 2, I'm like blown away by that episode. But back in the day, whenever it had a Klingon title, like Way of the Warrior or Battle's Too Strong, or that's not a Klingon title. But anyway, there's some Klingon titles you just know.
No battle is too strong. How dare
yeah, wait, that's suggest. Not a Klingon title. That's just a regular Deep Space Nine episode. But either way, I feel like it really did sort of bring in the perspective of like, oh man, they're doing a lot of this honor chat stuff again that I remember not liking when I was a kid. But I gave it another chance and I was like, okay, this is all interesting. But I don't think until we did this Klingon rewatch, I really quite understood everything and all the politics and what was going on, because it's relevant, but it's not relevant enough, if that makes sense. Like, at least for the viewer who doesn't already deeply care about Klingon culture, I'm a little bit hard pressed to like be fully into the world, if that makes sense.
Oh, I'm like chomping at the bit to respond to you. But I also want to go back to just like the changing faces of the Klingons, because okay, we're on a planet. And not everyone looks the same on this planet. And so It would make sense that on Kronos, they're like different sectors of Klingons are going to look differently. And so that's something I actually thought was cool about Into Darkness, was this was a remote part of Kronos that they were visiting. And so who knows how the Klingons look? Like, I think it's a cool, bold choice. I think what was confusing for me was like, well, all of the Klingons look this way. I don't know. Also in the chat, we have Salon Trek lighting it up saying, I think that the problem is the production cost of 90s Trek. All aliens and Trek look the same as the rest of their race, so every Klingon change is jarring. Yep. And that's very true.
I highly agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I think we get used to it pretty quickly. I think the only thing that I still actively make fun of is sort of the like thick accent that they put on for different Klingon words, you know, like when they're like, fuck,
Tukufma.
Kalesh. I'm like, where's the esh? This is Kalesh, my dude. Like, calm down. But I kind of love it. It's like grown on me a lot, especially because Ash Tyler says it all like that still, even when he's a human. He's like, hey, I was just thinking about vok. And you're like, what? So that's always good for a little laugh there.
Normal day for Ash, yeah. Okay, so Rihanna, you were talking about how hard it is to kind of follow along with the Klingon plot. And I think let's expand on that, because I had to go back in multiple scenes to catch the line or just try to figure out what they were talking about, because these scenes are dense.
They're very really dense. And they're all in Klingon, so you have to be reading and you have to be a fast reader as
and
well.
And I mean, I watch so much anime and I'm used to subtitles. Yeah, totally. So I don't know why it's hard for my brain to
do this. It's okay. This might be a random theory, but I think it's the font, and I think it's the way that they roll out the font. It's too slow. There's too many words per like page.
So you're maybe like,
I'm like, bah, because in anime they know like the amount and the timing of how fast the word should come in, because they've been doing this for a million years. But I feel feel like this Klingon font is so pretty and beautiful that it's sort of like overtakes the aesthetics overtake the actual comprehension. At least for me, I feel like that was a huge block for me.
Yeah. No,
I don't know. That's just me. But anyway,
I think that's a great point. I just, so, but let's talk about the plot. So, this poor man was murdered by Michael. Klingon body count starts right away. The Shenzo is chilling by some debris, and they realize they're able to identify that it's Klingon debris. And it turns out, so Michael, she goes through the field. She loves getting in her suit and doing random space jumps. It's her specialty. Yeah. And so she lands on this vessel, and I had to think about the song, "There's Klingons on the Starboard Bound," because
starboard bound.
Klingon appears on the ship and is ready to fight Michael. Meanwhile, they're surrounded by like Klingon coffins that are also on the surface. So literally Klingons on every bow. Mm-hmm. Michael says like, "Hey, like let's talk it out." Klingon tries to kill her, instantly murders. She's trying to save her life, defend herself. Yeah. Like it happens.
Sure.
But this is the torchbearer that was out.
The catalyst, basically.
The ship. And I thought that was really stupid. It'd be really dumb to send the torchbearer out there to fight Michael. I know maybe it's like a pride, like, oh, I'll prove to you that I'm the warrior. Mm-hmm. But, or was this all a plan by Takuvma to put this dude up here to be the martyr? Not knowing
exactly
that
Takuvma
was going to be the martyr later. But
those two.
So do you think so? This was the plan?
I think that a lot of people, I'm not saying you, but just like in general in the Star Trek universe, people tend to underestimate Klingons and think that because they're like battle hardy, they're not smart or they're not. But obviously you have to be super intelligent to think about all these battle strategies. And so I absolutely think that that's too dumb of a move for them to be doing, like to put out their torchbearer to fight. You know, like I think that's absolutely someone who is ready to die in battle for the cause. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. And so this is, it's a trap also for the Federation, because now the torchbearer is dead. The Klingons call for backup. Federation calls for backup. We're kind of extremely glossing over the whole Michael section of all of Discovery for the most part. But just to really talk about what's going on with the politics of these houses. So after this, by the way, we get some flashbacks that I did not realize.
Yeah,
was
more
Takuvma. There are Klingon flashbacks of Takuvma as a child, and because it talks about how the ship that they're in, the artifact is what they end up calling it, the ship of the dead, Saru calls it as well, it was like rubble in his in Takuvma's home, and it was abandoned. It was his father's ship, so he like spent his life restoring it, and this man equipped it with a cloaking device. And this is the only cloaking device in the Klingon Empire.
That shook me. That's like all the power right there.
And this is told through a flashback. Ooh. And I want to see that story. Like Takuvma is amazing. He's a genius. Like, did he take the plant? Like, did he have a Romulan who was able to like collab on the cloaking device? Was this his genius who created the cloaking device? Did he have plans for it already? What's going on?
So many questions.
I want to know what's going on. Yeah.
I 100% agree. I think this is a really cool way to sort of give, because the whole point of this whole beginning arc of the Klingons before even the Battle of the Binary is uniting the great houses, you know, what we're talking about today. And so I think that him having that cloaking device technology could be the catalyst of what reunites these houses. And I think that's exactly, you know, the whole plan all along is to get a strong base of Klingons who believe in the Torchbearer, who believe in light, who've been guided by this. I mean, Laurel talks about how she was guided by it, you know, and Volk and Takuvma, like all three of them, and probably the other guy. Red Room,
Cole.
Ryjack.
Cole.
Oh, Ed Cole. Yeah. Like a bunch of Klingons have sort of been.
Oh, Ryjack. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Not Red Room.
Yes.
Yeah. So I feel like they all, you know, sort of then created a little committee that then became this like incredible force with a cloaking device behind them. So I love it, but I do think it's so glossed over. And I do think it's very like, you have to be a specific type of person who already enjoys Klingon episodes, who's already fine reading subtitles, who's already, like, okay with a lot of heavy politics and talking scenes. And I'm not saying that a lot of Star Trek fans aren't that, because we,
like,
are.
Like, I am.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. Like, give me that. But I also feel like it can be some barriers for some viewers, especially people who are trying to jump into Discovery as their first Star Trek. Like, we're going to have a panel later on in the week that talks about, you know, fans who are kind of new to Discovery, who are new to Star Trek. And I think that that can be an alienating factor. And it does frustrate me, because it did kind of alienate me, because the plot was so dense so quickly. I felt like I was suddenly grasping on to this thing that I'd only, like, really know a glimpse of. And I know that's kind of cool, because then you get to world build, but I'm just sort of trying to nail out both the good and the bad of this kind of storytelling, because it's done really well in some places, but it's so dense that I think it's kind of hard to pick through.
Yeah. I will say the thing I'm missing that I think would have helped me try to stay focused is it's rare that we see a Klingon battle take place. There's only a couple in the show. They're talked about, and we see, like, oh man, the Klingons wiped out this whole armada, like, when things are getting really bad towards the end of the season. But I wish, like, I those scenes with Gowron when he, like, has his troops and they're fighting, and you see the, like, banter on the bridge between the Klingons, and you see them like drinking blood wine, and like that type of, like, I'm getting hyped up for a battle situation, I think would be really cool to see from the Klingons' perspective. We get a lot of good speeches to Kufma. That man can whip a speech out of his ass, and you will be crying by the end.
Yes.
Praising Kalis, like,
yes.
love Takuva so much, and Voke too, like, Laurel, all of them make some really good speeches. Yes. But I want to see, like, pounding on the pole, like,
I want to hear a song. That's what I was missing the most.
Whereas there's
Toy Kalesh Tuvo, Toy Mukme Boo.
Yes.
Santa Shay Julie, Sima Tune Moo.
Maka.
Exactly. I can sing the whole thing, but we don't have time.
Yeah. Time's ticking.
That's what I want. I want a war song. I want something that can, like,
there's no Klingon joy, I think. Like, I don't see the Klingons.
It's all the thing that Gaida talks about with Worf. Like, you're all frowns. Like, the Klingons are, like, drunk and laughing. And
but maybe this is just the era, and this is, like,
it's an all frowns era. Yeah.
All frowns. And they've also been in a period of civil war for a long time, like, as long as we know, and there's just been infighting between the houses, and so many people left behind from these fights, and so maybe they're just a serious race right now. And
honestly, fair, like, there's not a lot to be, like, celebrating when you're warring amongst yourselves. Like, I do get that.
I just like I'd like to see those scenes of them finding the Federation and the ships. But the problem is, that's not the story that Discovery is trying to tell. What they're trying to tell is about Ash and Voke. And I want to talk about, let's move to Laurel, because.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, we have some Takuvma love from William J. Jackson in the chat. Says Takuvma is one of my favorite Trek characters. I'm going to be terrible pronouncing the Klingon here. T'Thugan, Ma, T'Ka, something like that.
Honestly, that's pretty good.
Takuvma is amazing. And this will not be the end of us talking about him. But I think enter Laurel, because she is there from the very beginning. She's on the artifact. She saw Rajek die. She saw Takuvma become the torchbearer. She has been dancing around all these key players for a long time, completely overlooked, ignored. She becomes an ally with Voke. And then do you think she's planning this all along? Because by the end of the season, she's the High Chancellor.
She says in the line in the Butcher's Knife cares not for the lamb's cry. She says to cleave my own heart. So someone told her to cleave her own heart, to choose one house over the other. And she says, instead, I built a bridge to serve both. And then she goes on to say something. I didn't write this down, but I think essentially, like, not really needing to be the leader, fine being the follower. And so, you know what? Actually, I kind of got, like, a Spock vibe from Laurel, like, where not even, shall we say, reluctant for command or for leadership, but more like willing to be someone who is the hype man, who is the like supporter of the movement. And then it's sort of, it's like exactly that quote of like, some are born great, some, you know, or what,
achieve greatness, some have greatness thrust upon them. Yeah.
I think she had it thrust upon her. I think that it's exactly that sort of idea of, well, the torchbearers kept dying and she kept being the sort of one who was behind them at all points. So who knew the history of everything? But I don't think that she was planning to be a leader the whole time. But do you have a different idea, Ashlyn?
I don't think she intended to be High Chancellor. I think that was mm-hmm. like a shock. But
yeah,
I question it because Volk is not the smartest tool in the tool shed, like, which is not the right phrase, but he's not. Because he this whole thing with Cole, because he has Cole like takes over the artifact, and Terrell saves his life.
Laurel?
I'm so sorry.
There's so many names.
I'm so sorry.
What is it that they say in Lower Decks? Like, is it because his name somehow has an apostrophe in it? That's why it sounds familiar. They're like, oh yeah, why do all Klingons' names have apostrophes? Like,
not all of them, but a lot. Many. Yeah. Yes. Laurel saves Volk's life by transporting him, like by telling to Cole, you should transport Volk onto the Shenzo. Because at that point, mm-hmm. poor Volk has been, after everything that happens with, not Discovery, everything that happens with Shenzo at the Battle of the Binary Stars, the war starts. They're united under T'Kuvma. We kind of glossed over this, but important.
Yeah.
T'Kuvma is the one to unite the houses, and he declares an official war on the Federation. He tells everyone, go back to Kronos, tell them that we are united now. And after this, they all leave, except T'Kuvma is killed. Mm-hmm. And because there, it's only them and the Shenzo left. And killed by Michael, by the way. Mm-hmm. And then that's how we lose Georgiou. But so the remnants of this is that Volk is like, okay, well, I'm the torchbearer. I'll be the one to unite the houses. But instead, the ship is completely damaged, the artifact. And it takes him 6 months of repairs with his crew to get the ship up and at him. And at this time, it's chaos. It's just like war on the Federation. Cole is clearly like trying to lead everybody, it's kind of these weak alliances, but he's gaining power. The only thing the artifact needs is a dilithium. I'm sorry, I'm getting so into the technobabble because I just.
No, you're fine. I love it.
It's the, I'm sorry, I'm on the wrong page. The dilithium converter is what they need. And they get it from the Shenzo. But so when Cole comes to take over the ship, he does it so easily. Mm-hmm. And I thought it made Volk look really weak that he wasn't killed, honestly. I thought he was going to fight. I thought he was going to like try to make a speech or like just take control somehow of the situation. But no, Laurel turns on him. And then saves his life by having him stranded on the Shenzo. She then also beams herself over there. And this is her plan. So when she saw Cole, she must have been thinking already, okay, I know how I'm going to save Volk's life. Mm-hmm. Her plan is to go to the planet of... Oh, I'm so sorry. Where is it?
You're good.
It's like my quack or something, because mm-hmm. they have strange and mysterious things that they can do for you to get power, but you have to sacrifice everything. So she's thinking, I'm going to draft his skeleton on a Starfleet officer and set him in as a spy.
Girl, how?
What?
Who came up with that?
I just think that's like the most unhinged thing you could possibly think of. And so she must have had an endgame of some kind, because automatically that means that she will, whatever followers or anything that Volk had, automatically go to her, because mm-hmm. she is like his second in command, sort of like she's in cahoots with him in this plan. And so I think in that short term, maybe a power move was what she was trying to do. But
yeah, I could see that too. And maybe getting out from underneath the thumb of like sort of the houses in general. You know, I think they kind of needed free rein to do some crazy shit like this, like graft a Klingon onto a human. They needed to sort of get out of this own private warring, because as Starfleet is warring with the Klingons, so are the Klingons are still infighting, and there's still a lot going on in between each house. So I really, really think that it could be exactly that, of that, her both trying to get away from the situation, like physically, and like you said, exactly her sort take of power all along to take power, to take his followers. I love that theory.
Damn. I just think Voke, he just gets, I know it's like maybe enticing to be like drafted onto a skeleton, but I just don't see like where the honor is in this move for him. So I really, this watch through, I lost a lot of respect for Voke. I used to think he was kind of like, cool, he's playing the game. No, I'm a Takuvma and Laurel bitch all the way now.
Yeah, he did come off a little weaker when he did talk with Cole, and with like that whole part where he was kneeling at their feet and saying like words don't win wars, or Kor was saying all of that, which also shout out to Kenneth Mitchell, who played Cole, and just an incredible actor. We lost him recently, and so it's just like such an amazing person to be. You have to have some kind of just like inner, what's the word, like power to play a Klingon, you know, like as much as I love to be Lursa or Betor for a second, you know, like it's really hard to channel that much, like, I don't know, Klingonness.
Not for me.
That inner strength.
I'm here. So
I just always respect those people who can play Klingons, like Kenneth, like, damn, what an amazing legend. So just wanted to shout out Ken real quick. But yeah, it's so interesting to watch this sort of, oh yeah, also great mug. I love your Klingon drinking team. I hope there's some blood wine in there. she's like, wouldn't you like to know?
I will neither confirm or deny.
But yeah, so I think the fact that Laurel does seem to kind of be pulling the strings in the background, and that like even this whole thing where Kor is bowing to them, and that they're like trying to use the cloaking tech to sort of get on their side, Laurel knows that it's going to go sour. Like, I think that she knows more than Voke does. And so that gives me the idea that Laurel definitely has more battle strategy than Voke. Like, I think Voke has a lot of charisma and a lot of that like passion, but maybe not a lot of that like strategic technique brain going on. So they make a good team, honestly.
He's very dedicated to Kalesh. And that's also main man to be valued. Yeah.
yeah. Like they're both using their strengths in this movement. So good for them.
Yeah. And she said he could be best served in the body of Ash Tyler. I still can't get over that, but
how and why we will not know.
But you know, it works out for her, because the next time we see Laurel, she has her own ship, her own like torture crew that like they're taking all of these humans and torturing them and hanging Harry out with Mud included. Yeah. Yeah. So she has a loyal group of Klingons with her. She is in control of the situation, and we see that she is a very calculated torturess as well. She's very skilled at getting information out of people, both because she's just very intelligent, and so she can like talk them out of it, and she will find your biggest weakness and exploit it and torture you. Like we have a great scene. I do love when she tortures Lorca after he gets captured, because he has the eye light sensitivity, and she just like shines bright lights at him, and like it's kind of nice to see Lorca getting tortured. I will say,
always a little like
yeah, like I mean, at the time you're so scared because you're like, oh
sure,
my beloved prime Lorca, yeah.
My precious captain, oh no. Yeah. Yeah, these are all great points, Ashlyn. I think Laurel is such a fascinating character to me, because not only are all these Klingons supposed to be the villains here, you know, like they're obviously written to be the villains, written to be the antagonists of season one, the not so secret antagonists. You know, of course, then we have the mirror universe on the other side. But I do think it is interesting to see that we kind of, in a way, like, I kind of, I'm not at all rooting for them because I don't like to root for wars in general, but like I do kind of root for them in a way. And there is kind of a bit of me who being sort of trained as a Star Trek fan to love Klingons or to go back and forth, I guess this is, they're kind of giving us the TOS treatment again though. So it's kind of like, but now we have all this knowledge of mm-hmm. what the Klingons will become and what will happen and what the Federation will, you know, sort of ignite and what the Klingons will do for peace. Like all this kind of stuff is so interesting. And we're going to see such a 180, you know, obviously once we get to the TOS movies, but at least for now, we're such in a different era of Klingons and in a different era of like bigotry and hatred on both sides. And so I just really want to quickly mention this whole line of rhetoric that T'Kuvma keeps bringing back up. And I know we're trying to jump it around going back to T'Kuvma, but he says, one, that of course the whole thing is remain Klingon. That's the entire purity.
Remain Klingon. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's very much a purity mindset. And he goes on to say our purity is a threat to them, and that he doesn't like that the Federation has Vulcans and humans and Andorians mixing and inbreeding and all of this kind of stuff. And there is a lot of like just obviously Klingon supremacy going on here that's very entrenched, not only in the Torchbearers and the, like the whole Light of Kalesh thing, but also within the Klingons themselves. Like clearly this is very a purity culture, like very Klingon supremacy society.
It's propaganda they're trying to spread because that's the only thing to unite them is a common enemy. And yes, they say even we have to resist assimilation.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, sorry, Rihanna.
This is fascinating. No, I'm glad you mentioned it because this is exactly why I think it's so interesting and important to bring up, because they are basically using rhetoric that we would use for the Borg, you know, to talk about the Federation, which for us is such a foreign idea because, like, we don't see collaboration as assimilation. But when an isolationist culture who is infighting so much, who can't even unite their own houses, can't imagine the uniting of cultures that doesn't come with like stealing and disrupting and destroying. So I think they can only see it from a colonizer perspective, you know, low key. And like, it's just really interesting to think about. And then on the other side, there's so much bigotry from the Federation, not only from our main character, Michael, who has literally lost family members because of Klingons. And that, unfortunately, even in like normal Earth society is like a really common thing, is like we even have a family member, you know, who is bigoted for some reasons because their family members was hurt by that particular race, you know. And so similarly with Michael, she sees Klingons and she only sees her parents' killer, you know, and it can't go any further than that for her. And so, and I think similarly, T'Kuvma sees humans and only sees like those who want to assimilate and take away Klingon culture and make it one culture. And it's just so fascinating to me to see these like disconnect in understanding of each other and in completely two separate values, which honestly I don't think are like, obviously the Klingon values aren't great, but thinking about it from their perspective, I could see how they could see the Federation as sort of a like culture mongerer, like just trying to dominate and take more land and make it more of a lot of civilizations against one, you know, like when the Federation is against you, then that's like, that's not pretty on the other side. So I don't know. I just think this is a really fascinating debate that Discovery is finally talking about. Of course, we've had a lot of anti-Federation sentiment from other, from inside the Federation and from outside in different Star Trek. But I think that this takes it really deep in, and it talks really deeply about why the Klingons are so isolationist and why the Federation is so anti-Klingon. So it's just really cool. I'm really, I like applaud the writers so much for this.
Slay, slay, slay. Slay.
Yeah. The Klingon will slay also. Yeah.
Oh, where's that bat lift? Yeah. Absolute slay. Yeah. I love what you were saying about kind of rooting for the Klingons, because I root for the unification of the houses. Like, I root for that with all of my heart. Like, I want to see the formation of the High Council. I want to see how they can get these people together. And so I think let's go back to the like cloaking device, because that is like actually the key to everything. And by talking about the cloaking device, we have to bring up Cole, because as you might remember, he was the one who took over Voke's ship. So while Voke was getting tragically transferred bodies, Cole was doing the work of the war. And the way that he was using to unite the houses was to offer them the cloaking technology if a house brought him information or killed someone or did him a favor in the war that helped to further the initiative, then he would become like the house. They paint him. Their allied houses. And then that house also gets the cloaking technology. And so I think that's kind of a badass way to armor your fleet. Number one, like, okay, the risk is that what if one of these houses with the cloaking device goes rogue and, you know, somehow build up enough power to go head to head against Cole? That's the risk you run when you're when you're handing out cloaking technology. And so Cole's clearly hoping that this alliance will be strong enough to unite the houses. And I think this is kind of genius. I really respect what Cole did, especially in a time of so much confusion amongst all the leaders of the houses. They just lost to Guvma, who was like the coolest Klingon ever. And what do they do now? So honestly, respect to Cole, respect to the use, to spreading the transformer, you know.
Autobots, roll out, I guess.
This is my brain walking out as we speak. Roll out. Thank you. This is a huge reason why the Klingon Empire is so formidable, is because they all have a cloaking device that they use on their ship. So
I could not believe that this was the birth of the cloaking device for Klingons. Like, how did I not catch this? This is what I'm saying about the incredible writing of Discovery that's so buried. which is kind of cool. It requires a few rewatches, but I also am like, damn, I wish I'd caught that earlier. That's really cool. I think it's incredible. And you're exactly right, Ashlyn. I am wanting them to unite this entire time. And I think as we see Laurel continue to just like crawl her way up this ladder with a lot of bumps in the road, including herself getting kidnapped, Ash, all that whole Ash graft nonsense. Of course, we have to mention like Laurel is like a high key, a terrible person. Like as we're celebrating her, we also have to acknowledge that like she did commit SA on
She abused like, Ash for 7 months.
Yeah.
Like sexually. And when he's back on the ship again, back on a Klingon ship, and Ash goes into full PTSD shock. First of all, like applause for like having that be on screen, because we never talk about PTSD shock and like going into shock from like all the trauma that you've experienced. And so while it was, you know, like, oh, now Michael's alone, you know, Ash is rendered useless. I thought it was definitely appropriate to show him going through what anyone would go through, no matter how strong you are. Because there's just some things that are like so horrific. It's also wise to remember that this did happen. As much as we love Laurel, I do think that this is probably very common in Klingon culture. And so and she thinks, well, he's Voke, so he's mine to do with, like she controls every aspect of Ash's life. And I think that's just how it is, unfortunately.
It's a really important thing to note. I think you're so right. And they do have a really interesting talk about it in, I think, the beginning of season two. When, you know, we're jumping around a lot, but there's like sort of a, which we'll get to, you know, with Laurel, but they do have a discussion a little bit where he's like, don't touch me, you know, like he does set up these boundaries and is like, nope, it feels like a violation when you do that. And honestly, again, another very important thing to talk about. And I was really impressed with the writers of Discovery who didn't just brush that under the rug and who didn't just say, oh, that didn't happen, or, oh, whatever, it's not that big a deal for him anymore. Of course it's going to be. And so that was a really great way that they were able to sort of tie that back in to remind us that, like, although Laurel is like a boss bitch, she's also a bitch boss, you know, like she's also an asshole and has done some really terrible things. And Yes, but I think also let's just talk about her sort of rise to power as well, because we're talking more about like her beginning agenda didn't seem to be very leadership motivated. She was so devoted to the Torchbearers and to the light of Kalesh. So what sort of changed along the way, besides obviously people getting murdered and the whole grafting technique? But I'm curious for you, Ashlyn, like, do you think there was a switch that happened? Was it the grafting thing that like made her sort of think, okay, maybe I can really rise to power with this? Or I just don't know. I'm trying to like map out when her brain sort of started to be like, hey, hang on.
I think she just saw it as her duty. She said, well, there's no one else to do this job, so it's going to be me. I think it's simple as that.
It's going to be me.
It's going to be me.
That's probably literally what she did, I think.
She has old Earth music in her classical music iPod, yeah. I guess. Yeah. Oh, God. She loves JT. I don't know how we got here.
Like, what happened? Like, truly, what?
Oh, yeah, down. Panic. Panic at the Disco. Yeah. I think that she, once she realized, once she had the power, she was like, hey, you know, this is working out pretty well. I think what's interesting is her turn on Cole. Obviously, she never liked Cole from the beginning. Had so much disdain from him, did not respect him at all. But she realizes, I have to somehow get myself out of this situation. When she's on Cole's ship, she sees all the other Klingons are getting the cloaking technology if they're joining him. So she says, I hear you have a prisoner. Who's the prisoner, Rihanna, that Cole has? Cornwell.
Admiral. Oh, yeah. Thanks. Yeah. I just like, don't like being asked questions. She knows this, so I'm just waiting her to answer for me.
Well, I just feel like I'm talking so much. So I was just like,
no, you're doing great.
Give Rihanna a second.
Like, call and response. No, yeah.
It's Cornwell. Yeah. She's been captured. It was a whole trap set by the Klingons, set by Cole. And she says, well, I hear you have a prisoner. I'm really good at extracting information. I'll get something out for you. And then we can align ourselves. But when she's in there with Cornwall and she's like torturing her, she's actually saying, hey, I want not asylum, but I want to be free. I want to get out of this situation. So let's work together. We'll go on my ship and we'll be able to get away. But when she enacts this escape plan, her entire crew's been slaughtered, and she's like, well, that sucks, because Cole had a feeling. And then she and Cornwell are just like left to rot on the ship, because it sucks to suck.
Meanwhile
but like, this is at her bottom point. Like, Laurel is basically left for dead by Cole, and if it wasn't for Michael went in to help rescue her. That's when her and Ash came to submit this rescue. They also took Laurel with them. So this is such a crazy journey. Like, Laurel, I think it's smart that she ended up kind of turning herself in, or just like submitting her will to Starfleet, because she would die in any other situation. But yeah, it's just turn after turn. But I think it's also the first sign that she is a potential ally to the Federation, and she's been on the inside the entire time.
Yeah, see, that's exactly what I was going to say, Ashlyn, is like, I think although it might feel like she's turning herself into the Federation and like kind of maybe dishonoring herself a little bit, I'm sure she felt some of that, absolutely. I think it's also a very strategic move, because she knows that the Federation is not just going to straight up execute her. She knows that above all, the Federation wants to have peace talks and wants to talk about, you know, like solutions and ways to end the, not even just the war, but end this conflict in general and the tensions. And so I honestly think that it's also a political move. She was like, you know what, this will get me out of this deadly situation with the Klingons and put me in the hands of negotiators that will actually like maybe get me what I want, which is a seat on the council that is building, that they're like building, you know, when these houses are getting closer to uniting. So I honestly think it's so brilliant, because honestly, she kind of played the Federation's kindness. You know, she kind of played their hand of like, they're not going to leave me for dead and they're not going to kill me, which is right on both counts. Yes, she was taken prisoner for a while, but she was ultimately given what she wanted, which was Ash, and then later was a leadership position and a way to help her houses and help her her Klingon, her people, essentially. So I don't know. I think that's pretty genius.
I really admire her because she's thinking on her feet with these situations yeah. and coming up with solutions that end up with her just gaining more and more power.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just want to say Strange New Pod's message on the chat real quick that said Shahzad Latif does not get enough credit on his acting in season one. And I totally agree. I think that Ash, like the acting of Ash is just so complex and in just like a crazy amount of acting you have to do to pull that off. And I think he did such a good job.
So. And also, was it he Voke? Is he the human under Voke? I feel like when they talk, it's very similar. Maybe it's his voice. I don't know.
That's cool.
I thought so. Nice. Thank you, Strange New Pod, for confirming. Yeah.
That's so cool. Wow.
I just think that's cool. We kind of get, so when Laurel is in captivity on Discovery, we get some, oh, wait, no, I was real quick. I just want to go back to when Cornwall and Laurel are talking, because that's actually an underrated scene when I was watching for this episode that I really enjoy, because I feel like this whole time we haven't really got a sense of any of these Klingons' personality, except that they're just like, you know, war, honor, all this stuff. But finally, when we're one-on-one with Laurel, she's funny when she's like bashing Cole and saying about how stupid he is and how like stupid this war is and everything. I really start to take a liking to her in that scene. And that's just another thing that I'm missing with these Klingons is there. I feel like there's no distinct personalities. There's no one I can grasp onto. It's just like the vague Klingon leaders, you know?
Yeah.
And so I like that Laurel is also starting to stand out at this point in the season. I believe that what we're talking about is in,
mid-season.
Into the Forest, I go, something like that. But anyway, yeah. So
very good point.
Just shout to that. And then when we have Laurel, we get more one-on-one scenes with her and Ash, where they kind of talk it out and everything is revealed. She activates Ash when they go into the mirror universe. Yeah, I guess we can also talk about the end of Cole too, because Cole is dead. This is the famous scene where Discovery has to make like 112 jumps or something by poor Stamets.
The Klingon cloak, supposedly.
Yeah, thank you, Lorca.
Allegedly.
I did like the scene where Michael is infiltrating and she's collecting the data on the cloaking device, so then they can recognize it and it later in the episode. I thought just the set decoration, again, I have to just applaud like how cool the inside of the artifact is.
Yes.
And I've never seen a Klingon ship quite like that. And we never will again, it seems like.
They did a great job with that. I think that a lot of New Trek does really open spaces for alien ships. I'm thinking about Nero's ship as well. It just has like a lot of crazy decks and stuff. But I thought that this was done really well. And a lot of the Klingon ships, also, I thought this is going to sound weird, but I think also the like, because Discovery is kind of like grungy and dark and gritty and all of those like buzzwords, I feel like it can get away with showing a lot more of the absolute brutality of Klingons and the absolute like horrors of what a Klingon, like a Klingon prison camp type thing, or not, you know, but like the torture scenes we see and everything. Like, yes, they're very gory and hard to watch, and often I'm not even watching at all. I still think that they're done really well, and it's kind of the first time that Star Trek is allowed almost to show that level of brutality and to show it from the Klingons. Like, we always get a sense of it and we always hear about it from Deep Space Nine and TNG and whatnot, but I think it's so much more prevalent when you're actually seeing it. It's just an interesting thing to think about from like a production standpoint of taking that and being like, yeah, we're going to show you all of this gory shit, you know, like we are not sugarcoating the Klingons whatsoever, you know, and showing both the good and the bad sides. And that's just essential. And I think it's true for Starfleet too. They're showing all that gory stuff and all the animal torture that Lorca's just cool with, you know, like it's crazy, but I think it's kind of important.
Yeah. Wow. Great. Great, Rihanna. Well said.
I like the gore, but
I like my gore. I like swearing and gore in Star Trek. I think there should be more.
Amen. That is the prayer for Easter today. It's also Trans Day of Visibility, just like, and especially because we're doing a Discovery podcast, just like wanted to note that.
I saw someone post, "He is risen," and it was a picture of Spock. So there's my Easter contribution in the Star Trek world. Yes. Okay. So should we talk about now, like kind of moving to the end of the season? Because they go to the mirror universe.
Klingons are completely wiped out of this universe.
Yeah. Also,
like, just got to say, that's crazy. Because if you think of Mirror, Klingons are probably, like, twice as terrifying. Maybe not, because we learned more that the Mirror universe is circumstance over actual being evil from birth. But even so, crazy to think that the Terran Empire is so terrifying that all the Klingons
really
are
wiped out.
They really wiped out
all the Klingons? Because there's one in the Rebel tent. Says,
what, Slayer? Oh, yeah, the Rebel tent. I should have brought my glass that Ashton got me. Yeah. No, there's literally, you're right. I mean, of course, they're surviving Klingons, I think, in the diaspora, but Kronos itself, I think, isn't Georgiou like the slayer of Kronos or something? So
yeah, yeah, she do be. Well, real quick, I will say, in the Mirror universe, when the Klingon is talking and Ash is there and he's like talking back as Voke, and this is when things are getting like really dicey with him and Michael, but on the Klingon side of it, it is Voke in the tent. And so,
yes, it is.
Yeah, we have Voke party. He's talking about how like things like the Klingon language and culture and everything about what makes a Klingon is erased because of the destruction of the planet and because of the collapse that's what the Terran Empire has done to them. And in the Prime universe, isn't he saying the exact same thing? Like, what matters most to Voke is preserving the Klingon language and the Klingon culture and who they are. They want to remain Klingon. That's the whole thing. And so it's interesting and sad to see him mourning that loss in the Mirror universe. Yeah, I would like to see more Klingons. I feel like I shouldn't even go down this road. Are there Mirror Klingons in the Deep Space Nine episodes? Because I don't think
if they were, they were probably like done working with the humans.
Yeah.
But even there was no Zaddy Worf, Mirror Worf.
Oh, okay, yeah. So maybe they repopulated.
He was on they're on the other side. You know, they're against the Federation, the Alliance and whatnot.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. There's a Cardassian Klingon Alliance. Yeah. So thank you, Strange
DuPont. Yes.
Yeah. My brain
and Garrick is on Worf's leash. Yeah, normal stuff.
Absolutely. So that's what we see about the Klingons in the Mirror universe. But then when we come back, oh man, Discovery has been gone for nine months of the war. Oof. And the Federation got slapped. They got absolutely humbled. A third of the fleet is gone. I'm sorry, I use humbled so lightly.
I was like, woo, she just so humbled. Like it was a sports match. I know what you meant though. Like
hundreds of thousands, millions slaughtered. Very tragic. It's not going well. And primarily because the loss of the spore drive was huge, but most importantly, I think, is that when Cole died, there was even less unity than before. And so the attacks that the Klingons are doing on Federation outposts and in different sectors are completely random because they're not coordinated attacks. They're just merciless random because the houses are all in a war, basically to say whoever kills the most Federation outposts
turf
or whatever
wars, Loki.
Turf war, yeah, whoever kills the most becomes the leader of of the houses. And so Michael goes to Laurel and's like, how do we stop the war? Wait, was it Laurel? I think it was Cornwall. I'm sorry. You know, but there's this council. It's Sarek, it's Cornwall, it's a couple of important admirals. and the crew of Discovery that are talking about how the fuck to end this war, because Laurel says now the Klingons have tasted your blood and they will not stop until they're satisfied. And so there will be no end to the war. There will be no diplomacy. It's just it's just full out war. And she says the only way to stop it is to have like a huge attack that will actually work. Yeah. So, Rihanna, do you want to talk about the plan that the Federation comes up with?
Well, okay. So, Section 31, technically, isn't Georgiou, like, pseudo becoming a part of this already? Because she is from the Mirror Universe and found the first possible nefarious plan and jumped on board. Also, should note that this was exactly what Empress Georgiou did to destroy Kronos. Of course, now it's all coming back to me. She did plant. Was it a Viruvian bomb? Or am I just thinking about
Lower Decks? I think that's right.
I don't know. There's so much terminology in my brain, and it sometimes doesn't go in the right series. So, yeah, they plant essentially what Georgiou did in the Mirror Universe was plant a bomb in Kronos's like
in the core
magma. So that is basically what she does. It does not detonate, but she puts the bomb down there and then has the little detonator, and it basically becomes a like bargaining chip. But meanwhile, the Discovery crew does not know any of this. They think that they're gonna go in for like, I think, diplomacy or something. It's almost a completely different plan, but Section 31 has pretty much greenlit this basically, like, I don't know, ultimatum, shall we say, you know, like, either we stop this war or we will blow up Kronos, you know, and no holds bar. So this is just a completely wild, like, this is even more wild than the Vulcan hello kind of diplomacy going on here, or also, lack of, I don't know.
Sketchy, because they want Georgiou to be the one to pull the trigger, so then their hands are wiped clean of, it wasn't technically the Federation. It was this random mirror rogue element.
She's evil, so it works out for us. Our morals are intact. Yeah, that's interesting. And of course, then that brings Laurel to the table, particularly Laurel, because she's been the beginning of this, as you said. I think she's actually in the perfect place for this moment, you know, and I think that it really does feel almost like destiny that they were all like that. Laurel was able to survive everything that happened in order to be there, to come to the table and to have sort of a peace talk or at least start a negotiation, which not only starts a negotiation, you know, for like stopping the war, but it also starts a negotiation with the houses and with the warring houses and trying to sort of rope everyone in and get everyone aligned on what they actually want the Klingon world and the Klingons in the galaxy to look like. Because I think at this point, Laurel has said that even the fighting now, it's not, there's no point to it because there's no real victory for the Klingons as a whole. It's just these like bloody skirmishes that people then just use that for land grab. You know, it's not even really the most honorable way of fighting, because it's not fighting for Klingons or, you know, for their homeworld or whatever. But now, because their homeworld is threatened, that's sort of what makes this like an honorable cause to unite the houses. I think that's so cool. What a great, like, also a political like move to spin it that way.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I keep thinking about is that she basically forces them at gunpoint to unite. Yeah. It's like, how will we unite the houses? You will die or you will follow me, like literally. And like, you know, if you think about it,
Klingon than that.
If you think about it from a human perspective, like if a president came in and like, I will destroy the earth or you will elect me, that seems like highly problematic. But like somehow when it's Laurel, I'm like, mommy, okay. Like,
especially because she's a female, like Klingon. There's something about me that like the feminism just in my body just like explodes out. And I'm like, oh yes, okay, I don't care that she's evil. Like, I want females on the leadership, you know. Why are we the Dura Sisters podcast when they're kind of evil? It's because they're also kind of amazing.
Yeah, I also will say this is a canon change, I think, a little bit, because when the Dura Sisters are so heavily featured in TNG and Deep Space Nine, they talk about how they're not allowed to rule the House of Duras because they're women. That's why they have their like weird nephew, weird cousin, like
That weird little guy.
That weird little guy.
It's not no battles.
Yeah. And so it's, you know, if you think about everything is canon, everything they said is right. Like, what happened to all the women, to all the Klingon women that, like, Laurel, I mean, even in the beginning episode of the whole season, we see a ton of Klingons. There is one female leader who isn't Laurel. Like, there's another woman there. Mm. But so I don't know what happened where there's like no women in power, but I love to see it. And this is what Discovery is so great about doing, is putting women on the bridge in roles of power. So it's great to see Laurel in this position, and especially to be leaving season one in this position. And then I think let's briefly just talk about in season two, because we do have her and Ash questionably is hanging out with her, and they have a child together.
They have a child. Yeah. They have a child, and they are this child is immediately in danger. Like, this is not a good child to have in the Klingon world. It basically, he becomes a liability, like, the moment he's born, you know, like, it becomes such a danger to them both, to Ash and to this child. And so, long story short, this, like, one of the guys from the houses, I don't even remember his name, that very annoying elderly Klingon, is, like, ready, he kidnaps the child, is ready to, like, kill the child unless Laurel steps down, and then they're ready to kill Laurel. And then Georgiou comes in and saves the day and helps, you know, get them out of the situation, and they're able to fabricate Ash and the child's death to make Laurel look stronger, make it look like I killed them in order to choose Klingon over them, over my, like, blood family. I choose my Klingon family. Again, another just genius
Klingon found family. Okay.
Love that trope. We'll kill my blood for you. Like, dang. But of course it's fabricated. So it's like this genius move. And I just got to think, like, she's got a little bit of like a sneaky, like, Romulan, like, energy going on here. Like, she's got some good subterfuge. You know, I think that Laurel really toes the line. Like, she's absolutely honorable, but she also is not above doing some sneaky shit.
She's really smart. Yeah. She's so smart.
Such a politician, you know, like, she will lie, and she is kind of awful, but, like, she also is very smart, and she gets things done, and she really does get her cake and eat it too, or whatever, because, like, the baby's alive.
I was going to say the cake is the baby, and the baby goes to Borath.
The baby is Borath. Yeah, yeah. Like, the baby is now at Borath and is a complete whole ass adult. Like, but this plot, this wrap up of this whole family and everything is actually done so well. I thought it was a little bit more comprehensible than maybe the beginning couple of Klingon scenes that we saw in season one. I think they were really hitting their strides of how to write Klingons, how to write this sort of uniting the houses even more through this pseudo, like, her killing the two of them to choose Klingon. All of that, I think, was written really well.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And all of it is leading to, at the end of season two, when Discovery has to go to the future and they need backup, they need other people to come help fight the AI that is the evil AI that's in control of Section 31. And we have all of these species that are showing up for the Federation and helping them. We have the Kelpians, the Ba'ul are out here. And of course, Laurel and her Klingon ships are here to help. And I think that's really cool too, because, man, that would not have happened a season ago. So it's great to see that Laurel is in this position of power, that she has this, like, pretty solid relationship with the Federation. I mean, they did help her low-key get into power. So my regret is that this is now another lost time where we don't really know what's happening in this Klingon history between this and TOS. And the High Council is formed. She's the High Chancellor. But, you know, once Discovery jumps to the 23rd century, we've not yet seen Klingons. A Klingon, and we know that Kronos is destroyed. So, question mark, you know, like,
what happened?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe in Section 31, Section 31. Well, probably not. Maybe in the Starfleet Academy show that is set in the 32nd century, maybe we'll see some Klingons. I would love,
or at least get an explanation as to why we're not seeing them.
Yeah.
Because it is, like, kind of, I do feel their absence a little bit. I think that always in Star Trek, is Star Trek is always made richer by a Klingon story, you know, whether it's Worf, who's like an amazing Klingon who's with the Federation, whether it's Lursa or someone like Laurel or Bator or someone who's like kind of a villain, kind of on your side, depending on the episode. Those are always just so fun to watch. Even if I'm not like, didn't used to love the Klingon episodes, even now getting to explore them again as an adult and understanding the politics more and enjoying the politics more has made me just like really love watching these Discovery Klingon episodes as well. Like, I think it's just so important to talk about them, and especially as they made them such a huge role throughout the first season and into the second season, like Laurel in general and her powerful, like sort of the way that they left her off too, I think was so, so cool. Like, I think that they just did her story so well.
Yeah. Well for Laurel. Absolutely. Well. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I think she's the MVP of Discovery. And I think, well, the person I've most come around on is T'Kuvma. I like need a T'Kuvma t-shirt. I love him. Absolutely. Yes. My T'Kuvma bestie. Yeah. Yeah. But Laurel has really, really grown in my mind to be like one of the smartest Klingons we've seen on screen in a long time. Really fun to see her. Really fun to see this Klingon world. And at this point, with the appearance situation, I'm used to it. It's all good.
Yeah, exactly.
I tend to just, you know, maybe I'm off put by something in the beginning, but in the end, it's Star Trek. This is what they're giving us. Yes. And I love Klingon politics. And that's what we got in this in season one. So, love.
Yeah. Thank you so, so much, Ashlyn. And thank you, listeners, for joining us today. I think that we definitely get the golden targ today. We got to talk so much about the Klingons and culture and stuff. This is really inspiring me to maybe choose a Klingon series next time it's my turn, or, you know, be thinking about it for the future, because there is so much to unpack with them. So it's amazing. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, Rihanna, thank you so much for talking with me today. Thank you so much. We had a great chat going during this episode for everyone watching live. So thank you so much for your comments. Thank you to everyone. We hope you will get ready for 6 p.m. Eastern time. Oh, there's my dog. He's ready. He heard get ready because he's ready to go on a walk. But at 6 p.m. Eastern time, we have the Promenade Merchants podcast coming on. And then at 9:30, we have Captain's Quadrant. So you gotta show back up to YouTube. We have a fun rest of the day. So thank you so much, Rihanna. Thank you again to Strange New Pod and for Julian for producing this episode.
Yeah. You know, kapla to you all as you head into this next week.
I will fight you.
You all.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening. This week, do not let those pataks get you down. You know who we mean. And live long and prosper.
Cheery. Thank you for listening to the Dura Sisters podcast. Please tune in next week for the 5th episode of our finale series, where Ashlyn and Rihanna will discuss all the wonderful finale moments in Picard's The Last Generation. Please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, and Twitter, and check to see our suggested watch list for our upcoming episodes. Also take a moment to check out our content on Tumblr, TikTok, YouTube, and our merch on Threadless. All links can be found in the bio of any of our social media pages. If you like what you heard today, please leave us a review on whatever platform you listen. By donating $1, $6, $12, or $23 per month, you can become a monthly patron and unlock our exclusive rewards for each tier. You can find all of this and more at patreon.com/thedurossisterspodcast. If you would like to contact us for any reason, please do so at thedurossisterspodcast@gmail.com. These are a few of the podcast series we have covered: family, movies, and death fakeouts. If you haven't heard a particular series yet, please go back and listen to any of these episodes. Social media, marketing, and editing is done by me, Rihanna Hurd, and Ashlyn Gelman. And our intro and outro is by Jerry Goldsmith.
And you guys are out. That was awesome.